It's my recording, do you?
Oh, no, it's unusual, no. But...
I just find it helps avoid confusion.
Perfect.
Should I kick it off? And just by the way of introduction, I'm Marco Pagliara. I am right now responsible for the Swiss entities of Goldman Sachs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have our headquarters in Zurich and then a branch in Geneva, a fully fledged bank in Switzerland. I took that responsibility in January. I've been at the firm, however, for more than 10 years. The last four spent in London, where I was chief operating officer for the private wealth management business in in Europe, in EMEA, reporting to Chris French that runs our business in EMEA. Or has done that for the last 4 years. In January, I moved over, and the primary objective or the primary task is the one of restructuring the bank in Switzerland. I think that we concluded after a bit of analysis that we renew as a business and as Goldman Sachs commitment and momentum to the subsidiary that we have in Switzerland or to the company, that the bank that we have in Switzerland. I have to say we have thought long and hard about that. Obviously, we were looking and reading some of the pressure on some of the events happening internationally and some of the consequences of the decisions or the dispute with the U.S. And, you know, we were really assessing what the role of this entity was in the context of our global and European business in wealth management. I think what we concluded is that the reality is we book 30% or more of our European business in through the entity in Switzerland, and the entity continues to have value globally, especially if you think about what we call the growth markets at Goldman Sachs. So Asia, Eastern Europe, Russia, the Middle East, and Latin America at this stage that we are continuing to invest and try to develop. So we decided that we do want to keep the entity, we want to grow the entity, we want to invest more than we have done over the last few years on the infrastructure and on the people within the entity. And so I was asked by the global management team to come to Switzerland and to start that turnaround process. As you can imagine, the first implication of that turnaround process has been that I stepped in my previous role, already had some exposure and some visibility of the Swiss situation. But as I stepped in, we started taking assessment of the people that we had in there, and we decided to take actions in certain situations. And in other situations, people decided that they were not necessarily personally in line anymore with the strategic line of the bank in connection with the entity. And so in the specific case that involves you, Mr. decided to leave the firm recently, a few weeks ago.
Is that in fact true? My understanding is he was fired at the end of the working day without any warning.
We decided, and you know, we decided in concept that we didn't have the same visibility, and as part of the...
So he was fired. He was not... He did not... you misspoke when you said that he resigned.
I didn't say that he resigned. He left the firm. I said that he left the firm, and you know, we do not comment on necessarily on some of the decisions that we make vis-a-vis personnel. He left the firm. And that's the way it is. And following that, we contacted you, and we decided that we would replace him and in the coverage of this account. And obviously, the first concern, the first focus was the one of contacting you and announcing you that this had happened. And the obvious second concern is introducing an alternate coverage. And Roberto is the person that we decided that was appropriate to cover this relationship. Roberto will talk about his own experience and his own history, but I think that there is a good fit based on the fact that the relationship or the account is managed on a discretionary basis, and Roberto has a significant and long-standing experience in asset management business before the getting involved directly in wealth management. Mm-hmm. What can I tell you? I mean, it's like, do not want to comment extensively on the past history of the entity, but I think that the firm has decided to turn page, and there were a number of things, both infrastructurally and both in terms of the way that the entity was run commercially, that were less than ideal. And I think that many of the clients, unfortunately, both from a turnover perspective and from a client experience perspective, haven't seen the best of Goldman Sachs, and we would like to rectify that. So I'm aware, and I know that you commented in more than one occasion that you were not particularly happy or enthusiastic about changes in coverage that you had experienced, and some of the, especially the frequency of that. This is not, unfortunately, particularly uncommon. It is something that has been experienced by other clients as well. We would like to rectify that. We clearly have a hope and a belief that this will not be the case going forward. But
I've had two customer representatives in 20 years. I've had two in Goldman Sachs in the last 18 months.
It's fair comment.
Okay. And in both cases, basically my understanding is that they left or were fired because the discretionary investment strategy I prescribed for them was not acceptable to the London headquarters, and that they were being forced to try to sell me structured products and higher margin products made by the same geniuses in New York who invented the mortgage-backed securities that caused all of our present difficulties.
This is completely inaccurate.
So I have three separate people, all Swiss bankers, are lying to me when they tell me that.
It's completely inaccurate in the sense that, obviously, as part of our offering, we have alternative products and structured products, and we offer the ability of structuring OTC instruments and derivatives. The person that I'm introducing to you today, before becoming a sales professional, was part of our ISG group, that is the investment strategy group, that is the one in New York, that is responsible to define asset allocation and investment strategy for our franchise. And or for the PWM business and our clients, and where we manage our accounts on a discretionary basis. In that context especially, we have very clear rules on what we can sell to clients on a discretionary and non-discretionary basis. And I will tell you that the large majority of derivatives and OTC products are actually not something that we sell to clients on a discretionary basis. And, you know, Roberto can comment much more broadly
on
that.
I'm sorry to be the third face here, but hopefully it will be the last. We joke often, because of my age, that I'm more likely to die on this job than I'm likely to sort of change roles again. But I think I've been thinking about the rate of turnover and the various issues, and not necessarily just for us, because I think it's kind of, it's a bit more widespread, perhaps more for American banks than necessarily European banks that have had a model with which I'm only marginally familiar. But the Americans I know fairly well, because we've been, at least my education has been completed there, and we're much more, I would say, scientific about looking at investing than perhaps Europeans have been brought up to be. There are distinctions there. There are Italians and French and whatnot. But the issue about turnover, I think, comes when you have sometimes the conflict between a culture which is very individualistic, and the Swiss model, in my understanding, has always been very individualistic. And over this, you're trying to superimpose a process which is discipline. And it's not necessarily decision power left to the individual. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I think that is because I actually come from the process side. I've been I've been doing this job since 1982, not for Goldman. I've been with Goldman only 5 years, and I'll give you a little bit more detail later. But the part of the job that I've been doing is not the client-facing one most of the times. It's been actually running portfolios. And I can tell that there is a constant play in the minds of people between the glamour of being the decision maker and the non-glamour, between quotes again, of being sort of the client person, which essentially is really quite a silly thing to do, because some of us are made to do certain things and others are made to do others. And the best part of a job, or at least an organization, is to combine the various groups in such a way that they can achieve, of course, client success and financial success, because we're all here to make a buck as well. There's no mystery about that. So I think the message that we've been trying since about 2001, so before I have arrived on the scene, I came in 2005, and we have implemented it through this investment strategy group, which is an independent group of people based in New York, London, and Hong Kong, that takes strategic, tactical, and product allocations. So they do a lot of the thinking that goes into the building of the portfolios. Since 2001, we've had this effort, which has been kind of superimposed over a relatively more individualistic and dispersed experience that we were able to provide through individuals. Now, I think it's actually illegal today to have in an organization similar portfolios being run in a different, in such a different way that they diverge in performance. Am I correct on that, or?
In what respect are you saying that?
Well,
according to MiFID rules?
Yeah.
By the way, MiFID doesn't apply to Switzerland, but.
But in general, across Europe,
yeah,
it would be accurate to say that if you don't have a process that controls, that you would be a kind of out of line with the. So
No. Let me understand.
Yeah.
You're saying that you cannot have a fund that your clients can invest in, one of which is long something and the other of which is short something?
Well, no,
which
it
would
depends.
Diverge?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that you can, if you have two portfolios that have identical or reasonably similar objectives and asset allocations, they should not diverge by too much. You can diverge by a certain amount because implementation may change in depending on whether a client wants active management versus non-active management.
Right.
But if they are essentially similar, if they're 30-40, say, 30-70 fixed income stocks, they can allow the same type of instruments, either derivatives or alternative
assets.
But
in the case of a portfolio like mine, where I have given you discretionary authority, but with the guideline, the present guideline, that only Swiss franc sovereign debt with a average maximum maturity of 2 years, okay?
Right.
Well, what is that measured against? Is that would only be measured against somebody else who gave you precisely those same instructions, right?
Well, no, measurement is different. I mean, from the point of view of performance measurement, we can measure it against any type of pre-agreed benchmark. In this case, would be a government portfolio of Swiss denomination, less than 2 years. So an average duration of 1.25, whatever the number is.
The reality is that we are in the business of taking discretionary mandate from clients and accepting restrictions. There are restrictions that we feel comfortable with because, one, they're implementable. Two, according to our judgment in terms of investment, makes sense in the context of what the objective of our clients are from a financial point of view and from a suitability point of view. And three, that we feel that it's something that we can deliver on and we can effectively put in place and monitor on an ongoing basis, especially in a context where we're not receiving orders from clients and we are doing that independently. Now, you need to understand that in our business there is a fundamental structural issue, which is the one that we have the responsibility of the relationship as Goldman Sachs. And as a management team, we share that responsibility vis-a-vis the client and vis-a-vis our regulatory authorities. And on the other side, we have a sales force or a group of people that in our specific model are covering relationship, but not in places like UBS or in places like JP Morgan. That depends, obviously, on the people that you deal with. Normally, the bankers or the relationship managers have are more focused on the relationship, and then they're assisted by a group of resources that provide them support in managing the assets. Right? Our model is a slightly different model, and it's a more hybrid model, where there are situations and there are groups and people within our organization that are not client-facing and that are supposed to define investment strategy and manage assets. But we also allow to our investment professional the ability of, managing assets on a more independent basis, following the guidelines that we provide to them, or discussing with more freedom and with more ability to customize the investment strategy that clients want to be implemented.
Yeah, now, I didn't mean to suggest that there is no customization ability. Yeah. That was definitely not the message.
Just to get to my point is that in an organization like that, it is important from the perspective of the company and the management because ultimately within the Swiss bank I am responsible. Within the broader European organization, Chris French is responsible. Within the global management team, there are other people responsible vis-a-vis the regulator. We need to have visibility and we need to have transparency on what our investment professionals do. And obviously, on one side, there are commercial considerations like the one that you quoted before, where we try to manage commercially an organization and try to generate a P&L out of it, obviously. On the other side, there are suitability and there are compliance considerations that apply. Now, in Switzerland, in the entity that we are in Switzerland, this is a concern that we have to a higher degree, right? Why? Because, as you are sure familiar, I mean, a Swiss bank and Switzerland deliver certain confidentiality and secrecy provision. This has consistently been a separate entity within Goldman Sachs. The large part of our investment resources and managerial resources are sitting in London. Mm-hmm. And largely speaking, they do not have access to this information because they're protected by the confidentiality mm-hmm. elements that are characteristic to Switzerland. So I have to say that for a number of years, this has been an entity that has been quite opaque to the rest of the management team and organization outside of Switzerland. So what some of the people that you've dealt with in the past were feeling like might have represented as commercial interferences were more very legitimate requests of understanding, you know, having visibility on client relationship, having visibility on management style of accounts, and having visibility of what was done in accounts of clients to have an ability not only of affecting, as you suggested, the commercial results of the organization, but, you know, the risk management and the control of the investment that we do. In Europe, we have 100 investment professionals, and, you know, with our model, the risk that you have at times is that you might have 100 different investment styles and 100 different people that think that they are least tiers and that have an investment strategy that is superior to the one that, you know, in a more sophisticated or in a more structured way, we can construct centrally, right? So as a business, we are a little bit in the process of trying to recover control of that phenomenon. And within respect and without any intention of actually penalizing clients, actually quite the opposite, guaranteeing and delivering a more consistent investment experience to people that we deal with on a discretionary basis. And frankly, making sure that we're entirely compliant with suitability, appropriateness of investments, even though they apply differently in different jurisdictions like the UK, according to MiFID, or Switzerland, right? So, you know, there have been, of course, and there will always be historically some merits on some of the statements that you made where, you know, obviously this is a commercial organization, there are products that we sell, and, you know, there are targets and quota and objectives and budgets that are given to people, right? But I can tell you very comfortably, given the experience and the role that I've had in the organization, that there is no coercion and there is no strict guidelines that are given to salespeople within the organization in investing client assets, especially where clients are not comfortable in strict ways. Of that, I'm very comfortable because I believe that through.
Having heard all of this,
yes,
I can't begin to imagine why you have a Swiss bank charter.
Yeah.
If you don't want to behave like a Swiss bank, why go to the trouble? I can get the same service out of London or New York if I want to deal with the London and New York organization. And I further have to tell you, I've dealt with Swiss banks since 1978.
Yeah.
Total, I think, of 7 of them over the years.
Yeah.
I have never had a conversation like this once over that entire period, 30-year period of time, with anybody in a Swiss bank. You talk to them, you say, I tell them, this is what I want you to do, this is the investment guidelines that I give you,
mm-hmm.
and I would like you to tell me how much it's going to cost to do this on a yearly basis and on a transaction basis, and they give me a quote, and we sign a contract, and that's the end of it.
But there is no problem with that. We can definitely do that. The problem.
But that's not what you're telling me. You're telling me is that you want to change the model more open, to be more responsive to the marketing division, to be more responsive to the.
I don't think I said that. Excuse me.
You said that.
No, I said, I talked about the investment process. You need to make when you make investment decisions, you need to have a base to make the investment decisions on, respecting, of course, the client's guidelines.
No, that base is the client's guidelines.
Maybe we're using different terminology. If you,
I think you're talking about a slightly different thing. I mean, it's like clearly you're a discretionary client. There are various type of discretionary clients, right? There are discretionary clients that come in and they want to buy the views on the market or the strategy to manage discretionary money that Goldman Sachs as ours is delivering, right?
Right.
So that, to me, it doesn't sound like you, right? Because you have a quite precise mandate and quite precise suggestion or ideas on how your money should be managed. However, you're giving discretion to implement on that quite strictly defined mandate to the organization.
Exactly.
Okay. He was talking about our process to manage discretionary money in a context or in a situation where the client is not doesn't have such a clear idea. And he's frankly giving us, you know, number one, using our resources in defining an asset allocation that makes sense for them in a context mm-hmm. where the indication that we're receiving is a much, much different one and much more related to their cash flow needs, their expectation of a return over a long period of time, and things of that kind. So we have many clients that are like that. They step in, they deal with our investment strategy group, and they request for an asset allocation. We generate the asset allocation for them. We implement that asset allocation for them. And then in the implementation phase, there are tactical decisions that need to be made, and we give them guidance on that as well. I mean, clearly that's not you, right? What is, as far as I understand, I mean, what you've asked to the organization to do so far, it's something much more pointed, much more restricted, and much more...
And which
you
is,
can
which
obviously
is,
do
which
that.
Is what,
it's totally fine.
Which is what I have done dealing with Goldman Sachs since 1985,
absolutely.
When I opened my account in San Francisco originally. Okay? At that time, I called, I represented, was named, and I gave them almost precisely the strategy that you're implementing now, except it included both corporate debt and sovereign debt at the time. And for the next, 1985, what's that, 25 years, we never had this conversation, but there was never a problem.
Let me explain you why I made the point that I made. I mean, it's like I was trying to address a different point, which is not our ability of facilitating the strategy for you, which is totally fine, and it's something that we don't have any concern in the world with. I was trying to address a different concern, which is the one that you started the conversation with, which...
Right.
You know, the reason why people have discontinued the relationship that you were covering, you discontinued the relationship with Goldman Sachs, is because they had to leave because we fired them, because we were forcing them to sell structured product to clients that didn't want them. And I was trying to address and explain why, I mean, you'll pass me the frankness, this is completely incorrect, and it's a spin that you have received from people that have, you know,
ulterior motives.
Yes, and they've decided to progress their career, we decided that it was better for them to progress. Okay, and frankly, one of the reasons why we had decided that they should progress their career somewhere else is because they were telling things like that to clients.
So it is not true that you have given call sheets for specific products to your customer representatives in which they have to confirm that they called and pitched that product to their client. That's not true.
That's never happened to me. I've been here for
5 years.
No,
that's not the question. Does that happen?
It does happen that we have product launches that we have, and that we identify clients that might be interested in those products, and that part of the responsibility of the sales force is where applicable and where suitable and where appropriate to contact clients to market those products. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in situations where we have a discretionary relationship and especially where we have guidelines or restrictions from clients in doing something that is completely different, that has nothing to do with
and
that.
So why is it then that when I have a discretionary agreement, mm-hmm. which is strictly limited in its guidelines, I received by email a pitch for the Facebook deal, which said that if I disclosed it, I would be subject to criminal penalties in the United States of America. Well, that's the most outrageous thing I have ever received in my entire life. I would have sent it to the Financial Times, except I went to their website and it was already there. That was an outrage.
Well,
why did I receive that?
Well, the fact that...
No, I don't know. I asked you,
I'm trying to address the question. This is obviously a deal that we have facilitated and a deal that we have promoted to some of our clients, right? It is part of the discretion of our investment professional to present and propose investment opportunities to clients, right? And, you know, one of the things that we ask our investment professional to exercise their judgment is to what clients is suitable or appropriate to present those type of offers and to what clients is not appropriate or suitable to present those offers. Right?
So it was sole discretion to present that to me.
Absolutely.
After we have had conversations in an interval of every 6 months over a period of 2 years in which he never raised anything like that to me before, in which I made it perfectly clear that I am the most risk-averse investor you have ever met, that I have no interest in equities because a huge amount of my net worth is still in one NASDAQ stock, the company that I founded.
Yep.
And suddenly it popped into his head to say, this is a guy I should pitch the Facebook deal.
Mr. Walker,
can I add something? I'm actually very familiar with that situation. Yes. Sorry, let me address that.
Sure.
That's absolutely the case. And the reason is that, you know, I was part already at the time of the Facebook offering of, and responsible for this entity, and I can tell you that I didn't list it, and I didn't provide any client list, and I didn't have any conversation with suggesting that he should pitch that product to you. And I can tell you that in London, they would not know, frankly, who you are and what your accounting involves, because they don't have access to that information. So it was, I'm quite comfortable in saying that it was a product or an investment opportunity that we had, and that probably that and understood or fully grasped the extent to which you didn't want to be shown an investment opportunity like that one. And in any case, this is a deal that we would have never booked or invested in on a discretionary basis in the context of the mandate that you had given us. So there are clients that appreciate to be shown opportunities and or shown investment ideas, and there are clients that are not because they're not consistent with it.
But in 25 years, nothing like that had ever happened before.
Can I suggest or maybe make the hypothesis that the one of the problems is that had enough exposure and enough understanding of what is the investment style that you had, what were the limits and the characteristic of the mandate, and in that context made a mistake because they shouldn't have shown you that investment opportunity.
Okay, I guess I'll have to ask him.
I can tell you the deal was known to be, if anything, way oversubscribed under all circumstances. So looking for people specifically to try to promote it was not necessarily an issue in this particular situation. Aside from all the discussion about the suitability, there was one place where we didn't need to worry about whether it was ever going to get demand. This was one of them. There was no... Everybody that began to know about it wanted to be.
However, look, I mean, it's like the reality is that we do have a commercial and marketing organization. We do have a group in London that it's called Alternative Capital Markets that is there to inform clients and to inform investment professionals of the investment opportunities that we offer. But what I can guarantee you is that in our model, the investment professional, i.e. the person that is the responsible of developing and covering the relationship, is the ultimate filter. There is no one outside of that organization that can, A, force the investment professional to present products that are not supposed to be presented to that client. There is always going to be commercial pressure, but the ultimate decision is with them. And I can tell you that was a long-standing professional at Goldman Sachs that had been with us for more than 10 years, for sure. I mean, I think around 15. And it is somebody that traditionally has been very resistant and very independently minded on any commercial pressure that might have been exercised on him on selling different products. So I'm genuinely convinced that in that situation, he thought about presenting that investment opportunity to you because he was thinking probably that he was showing you something interesting, right? Misinterpreting your intention, misinterpreting your investment style, and misinterpreting what you want from this relationship. And I think that the reason why he did that is that he didn't have enough exposure to all this information. I don't know what the reasons are, but probably because of his lack of time spent and dedicated to the really understanding of this relationship. And I think this is something that we should fix. And I will tell you that this is something that I've noticed in that situation, in other client situation, and it was a consideration in our decision to move on with it.
Okay.
I don't know what else I could tell you to substantiate that, but I guess that will have to be based on the experience and on the different coverage style that we could offer you on a going forward basis.
Can I ask you a couple of questions since you have actually answered a good deal in this conversation? You just talked about the mandate that we have, and it was my understanding that it was supposed to be exactly as you said. Government debt, Swiss, below 2 years. A couple of the things that were not clear to us, though, was whether we can actually invest in something different than the one or two issues of Swiss government bonds that we have accumulated now in the account, and also that there were a number of corporates in there, which today we would do, well, First of all, they're not governments, so they're
Let me explain. Okay. The guidelines that I gave were as specific issues mature to replace the corporate issues with sovereign issues.
Okay.
So we have some legacy corporate issues still in there.
So those are fine for you,
Those are fine at the present time. And in fact, I've been thinking of perhaps changing to go back, let's move back to more like a 50-50 or something like that with the worries people have about sovereign debt.
Corporates and sovereign.
I'm not giving you those instructions.
No, I understand. But I would think that that does
not
probably...
I generally don't make rapid shifts. I simply say, as things mature, let's move from this average maturity strategy or this mix of corporate and sovereign or whatever, rather than...
Matures includes cash flows from coupons. Any kind of cash flows from the corporate side.
Well, if we have enough built up in the cash account, I have been making... that have used up a lot of the actual cash flows.
Right, you take up...
So that hasn't been that much of an issue.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
But basically, unless there's some terrible shock circumstance that requires a rapid change in strategy, I'm an engineer. I am the most fanatic believer in efficient markets you've ever met. I do not believe you can predict the future. Therefore, I believe that all of your people who are doing market timing might as well be looking at chicken entrails. They're idiots, okay? You can't do market timing. There's thousands and thousands of published papers that show that you can't do that.
It's very difficult.
Okay? It's not only very difficult, it's impossible. It's absolutely mathematically impossible. And so therefore, I don't gamble on interest rates going up or interest rates going down. I simply get my repayment at the maturity date, and I buy whatever it looks like a good replacement for that. And it all averages out over time. I do precisely the same thing with currency diversification. I don't trade the euro for the yen, for the pound, for the dollar, and so forth. I simply have portfolios in the major commercial currencies, and if one of them appreciates to the extent that it's out of line with the rest of them, I move some of that over into the ones that are currently underpriced. And this is something that I do with a time perspective of, maybe every 2 or 3 years. That's how actively I trade and work with these things. So, I was basically used to meeting with my account people every 6 months, and frankly, that was too frequently for the changes in instructions. We mostly just talked about the general economic circumstances and what they were forecasting and so forth. And since I don't believe in forecasting, there wasn't really much reason to talk
about
a lot of that.
Having discussions about that. Can I ask you how many times you met with while he was covering your account?
Generally about every 6 months, and so you just have to look at the period that he took the account over.
It's probably three or four times,
May I just conclude or at least continue on that? So Swiss govies below 2 years, it doesn't mean that we have to buy the same issue. We can buy anything within the 2 year, 0 to 2 years in Swiss governments.
Well, in fact, the guidance I gave was an average maturity of 2 years.
Average.
But I don't want to do that with half 30 day and half
30 years,
year
right.
or something like
right.
that.
I
wouldn't want to go out beyond five for an absolute.
So average, that's much clearer. I appreciate it. Average maturity, not duration.
Yeah.
Okay, 2 years, max, in any case, five.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. And we can select the issues. We don't have to... I perceived a certain amount of reluctance in people taking active decisions on this account.
Well, I actually have a piece of paper today changing my instructions, and that I'm revoking all discretion on this account effective today. And so from now on, anything... will have to be confirmed by me in writing before it is done.
Okay.
So I can just give you a copy of that right now. This is the Keith and one to sign. I guess
really. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, Written approval includes emails, or do you want
to... The email is fine, yes.
Okay.
So I have no problem with that.
Shall I or shall you
what?
Acknowledge?
Oh.
Or do you want an acknowledge, right?
Yeah, I just want one copy signed as
sure.
acknowledging receipt.
Yeah. Shouldn't be a problem.
Okay.
So you can do that right now. If
yeah.
You. Here's the pen.
All right, you're going to be the AP in this relationship, so I think it's
okay.
Best if received from you.
Okay, so we
you,
can...
You don't have to sign that one.
Right.
It's your copy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah.
I just want to put down what I put.
Okay.
So this, you still want to stick, though, to that general idea?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so we can talk about what we think we'd like to do in the context of what you have just signaled
right.
to us.
Right.
Going one step further, you mentioned before your... relatively large risk in equities because, of course, of your shareholding in whatever
yes.
else you
yes.
have elsewhere. And also all the philosophical context that you have given about asset management, with which I, by and large, agree. Why limit yourself then to just 5 years as the fixed income part in a diversified portfolio? And if you assume that you're diversifying with this block, what else you have, typically works better if you have a bit more of a longer duration in terms of offsetting the valuation components that you have elsewhere. Why limit to 2 years, excuse me, of average maturity?
Because, how do I put this?
Because that's usually your cushion.
Well, that's usually my cushion, and I mean, understand, you made another statement with which I violently disagree, which is we all want to make money. No, I don't want to make money. I don't want to lose my money. I have enough money already. Okay, when I say I am risk averse, I am risk averse.
Right.
I don't have any problem buying a bond with zero interest rate as long as I'm sure I'm going to get my money back and it's not going to be inflated away by the time I get it back. Okay.
But I'm not talking.
Therefore, I believe, and I would have told you this a week before the Japanese disaster, that the world's financial system is at tremendous peril, that we haven't begun to see the play out of the sovereign debt crises, that the next one is going to be, well, I would always say that last week I would have said the next one's going to be the U.S. This week maybe I'd say it's going to be Japan, which has 2 times the public debt. Starting today, the third largest buyer of U.S. Treasury debt is out of the market, basically. They're going to be bringing that money back home to rebuild. And you start to work out the implications of that. Why on earth would I want to own a 30-year bond? I'm not going to live 30 more years.
No, but I didn't
okay.
say...
Okay.
I think, though, if you look at it from the specifics, i.e. this portfolio, I'm 100% with you. But in the complex of things... What you want is things to balance each other out so that your return overall, including the stock and including everything
yes.
else, is relatively smoother overall. And we know through at least historical relationships, it's true, historical relationships may not hold the same way that they did in the past, but for the moment, we don't have evidence that they won't. Historically, the best way to balance a portfolio, as you have described it, is having not 30 years, but anything with a duration of about 5, which means an average life of maybe 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not talking about massively changing from 2 to 30. You're talking about increasing that little bit with components underneath, which may have an element of maybe 10, 15 years. But on average, never going beyond, say, about 6 or 7,
well,
which have been actually better supportive of other assets.
Yeah, if you had anything that looked like a normal yield curve, but you don't get that much for bearing the principal risk for 5 or 10 or 15 years.
The principal in terms of temporary, or in terms of volatility, or in terms of repayment.
Well, not so much for sovereign debt with repayment,
right.
but in terms of
volatility.
One
volatility studies have actually in terms of fixed income, have given as a best soft spot the 7 to 8 years area, mm-hmm. not the 30-year, not the one. So in terms of value per unit of risk, historically it's been 7 to 8 years, which can be combined in different ways. I mean, I'm not suggesting you go in and buy just mm-hmm. you know 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and that's it. Depends on the view on the currency, even the currency in the case that you have to consider the currency as one of the participants for the monetary policy. But in terms of the economic conditions, inflationary conditions, and possibly even future monetary policy, you can control even how you distribute those 6 to 7 year average maturity. So I think what I'm saying is this. I understand what you're saying. And I also understand the final point about not losing money. But given the complexion of the assets that you have, right, my hat right now is to say the best thing that we know works in that configuration, and I don't know what the amounts are, so I'm short of one big piece of information. Right. But let's assume that this is proportional somehow. Then the best thing to do with this is actually something that is a bit more long than 2 years. That's all.
Right, which I do not wish to do.
Okay, that's fine. Then that was just my advisory role, if you yes. want, or to the extent that I mean, I can.
You're seeing yep. one piece of this puzzle.
Right.
And the puzzle as a whole is quite a bit more complicated. You used to see more of the piece of the puzzle after the last disaster, or before the last disaster, when I moved 2/3 of it out. Basically, I consider it balanced in my terms. I have a very different view of risk aversion than most people do. And all I can say is, you know, you can do all the forecasting you want. From 1945 to 1974, the Nifty 50 in the U.S. had consistent, wonderful returns. And everybody that bought in based on that in 1973 got massacred, and they didn't get it back for 15 years, okay? And that happens again and again and again. And all I can say is if I had a nice balanced portfolio out there 8-10 years in Japanese yen debt right now, I would be scared to death.
Well, there's no reason you should have Japanese yen debt if you live here, but unless you had a view on Japan and on the debt and on the currency.
Unless you wanted to do a trade weighted diversification across the major international currencies.
But you wouldn't do it on the fixed income side. We would not recommend you do it on the fixed income. You can do it, of course. But you have to have a view.
No, I mean I don't own any Japanese yen debt, and I don't own any of it because it doesn't pay any interest. I mean, why would I want to own something that doesn't pay any interest?
And it also would not make sense from your point of view. We would agree with you on that. So
but all I'm saying is if I did,
right,
or if some disaster happens to the U.S. dollar and I had a bunch of U.S. dollar bonds, none of which I have either, I'd want to be nimble and be able to get out without having a lot of volatility cost and whatever.
Perfect.
And that enables one to make those kinds of allocation changes. That's all. That's
okay,
that's
so your limit is 5 years maximum.
My goal is not even remotely optimizing return. My goal is not even remotely generating a consistent return, because I don't believe that's possible. My goal is being sufficiently diversified to ride out what I view as an extremely turbulent period ahead. I would like nothing more than to be absolutely wrong and to discover that we're at the beginning of another tronc glorieuse, as the French call it. Okay,
right.
But I don't think we're there, because when that period started, you didn't have all the major industrial companies, industrial economies coming up on 100% debt to GDP ratio, and I don't know how you get out of that. And I think there's some kind of huge train wreck coming, and I don't know what shape it's going to take. I don't know when it's going to start. All I want to know is that when it's all over, I have enough left that I don't have to go back to work as a programmer. That is my investment strategy.
That's
because they aren't hiring year-old programmers these days in Silicon Valley.
Understood. Understood.
If I may, I mean, it's like you need to understand that we've never met you. We don't know you. And having this type of conversation for us is critical to deliver what you want, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's part of our job.
And I don't know if people that you've seen before had that interest, but we certainly have that interest. And you made a reference to the other pieces of the puzzle, right? We will always, because we are a commercial organization, have an interest in seeing as much of the puzzle that we can and servicing you accordingly to what you expect and seeing the pieces of the puzzle, right? Now, this is something that I fully understand and I agree with. One of the consequences of this will be that, you know, we will possibly have a need of talking to you on a slightly more frequent basis rather than every 6 months. So
we will, definitely.
We'd like to understand your availability or your willingness to engage in that type of conversation. And then on the other side, it is critical for us, for at least in the way I see this, the job that we do and what we try to achieve, to at least have a chance to think that, you know, in future we can see if we deliver more parts of that puzzle, or that we can engage in similar conversation to actually deliver what we need to deliver. So it's important to me that you just understand that that will be the outcome of
yes.
revoking discretion.
Well, that's not a problem, because I mean I have in the past at maturities had telephone or email conversations saying,
okay,
you know, this is what we're thinking of replacing this with. Is this fine with you? And that's
right.
I mean, an email back and forth is all that's really necessary in that kind of case.
Okay.
And
is that good for you if I just send you an email with a proposal?
Yeah.
And then, okay.
Yeah.
And I think
or maybe a list of two or three if there's a couple of different options available.
Well, there's a number of things. I mean, right now you have a lot placed in one particular bond.
Yeah. Yes.
And you know that. So my suggestion would be, given especially the fact that we can go up to a maximum of 5 years, is perhaps to do a little bit more spread over time. I will propose to you at least what I think
mm-hmm.
should be done, not touching the corporates, which will be continuous
right.
to come through.
Yes.
Understood.
Yes. The huge placement was purely rush to safety back during the cataclysmic days of late 2008, 2009.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
If you don't want to change it, we don't have to.
I mean, and in fact, at the time, we had a lot of cats and dogs that were being hit pretty hard in the corporate sector by the AIG crisis and so forth. And at that point, I said, let's just sell them all and put it all into the bond. I think some of them I took a hit of like 20 to 40%.
Well, at some point, some of them did.
And
yeah.
some of them came back. Right. I don't care. I never regret taking a loss to improve the safety of the portfolio.
Okay.
Makes sense. Just another housekeeping point. Changing the structure of the account, I need to double check with our legal and compliance people if there are any, you know, paper trail or any further documentation than on our side we need to.
Okay, I mean, I think all we really need to do is to tear up the discretionary agreement, and that should do it.
But just allow me
to
check that if there are any follow up from a more administrative perspective, and then, you know, certainly there will be a follow up on the structure of the charges in the account. I need
mm-hmm.
to check what was the discretionary fee that was applied to the account,
right.
if any. And normally the way we do is that we deal with clients on two bases. I mean, if it's a discretionary mandate, there is a management fee and there are commissions that apply to the trades that get executed. If the account is non-discretionary, normally, obviously, there is not a management fee. The commission continues to stand, and that there is normally a custody fee that applies
mm-hmm.
to the account. So we might have to tweak, not to
right.
change the income profile of the account, but just from an administrative
mm-hmm.
perspective to revise that. But if that's okay with you, we
that's
will
fine.
Check and we'll get back
you
to
can
you
just send
on
me
that.
New
yeah, absolutely.
We'll that's fine.
But, you know, what I like to think is that if we deliver and if we prove you tangibly that we want to do what you want to do and that we don't have a different interest in line, that, you know, that hopefully we can build a relationship that is functional in that context.
I have to say, I don't think the fit is there. I don't think what you're trying to provide is what I was looking for when I started working with Goldman in 1985.
I'm not sure what you mean when you say what we're trying to provide.
I have always basically viewed myself as the investment strategist and not having any need of all of these extreme theory physicists in New York who weren't good enough to get real jobs as physicists, figuring out what I ought to be buying. I mean, none of them outperform the S&P 500, so why do I need to pay management fees for that? What I don't want is a lot of turbulence. What I don't want is a lot of interference. What I don't want is a lot of changes. What I want is simply I provide the strategy. I have been willing for 25 years to pay the so-called management fee simply to have the transactions done based on the instructions that I give. And that's what I expect from a chartered Swiss bank. That's the usual relationship between a client and a chartered Swiss bank.
We could look.
It is apparently not your business model anymore.
I disagree with that. That's not right. It's just a terminology issue, meaning that, again, you have always structured these with us, and I guess with others, as a discretionary relationship, right? Where, you know, in theory, we are asked to intervene and have a role in the definition of the strategy with which the money is managed. We have tons of assets, tons of relationships, tons of accounts where we don't have that discretion, and we do exactly what you're suggesting. We do it on an execution basis, right? And so I just think the only anomaly, if I may, and it might have worked perfectly for you, but I think you need to understand that we're looking at the relationship in a different way because we don't know you and we didn't know all the background, is that normally this is not what we do in the context of a discretionary relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But so I think you'll be what you want to achieve is much better achieved in the context of a non-discretionary situation where we respect and understand that you have an investment view and an investment strategy, and we execute on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we can be useful in any form or shape, I mean, we will be, but that's guided by you. That's very clear, and we can do that. So I'm not suggesting that you should do the other, but you need to understand that it's confusing to us, the fact that this relationship has been, because of the terminology that we have, of the way that we run, the fact that this relationship has been managed as a discretionary one.
It's only confusing because of the turnover that you have. If I've been working, I mean,
it's
every couple of years I have to educate a new team on the services that I'm looking for.
Fair enough. And I apologize for that. But
well, it is my problem.
It is. You just told us so much, too. By the way, I hope you don't mind me pushing back on some of your points. It's just my way not only to understand you, but quite frankly, the little bit that it's going into any of this is supposed to be having me telling you what I've seen, or at least what I understand of this business, which may be worth zip, but at least that's why I do interact. So don't take it as being either a sales job or anything else. It's just me trying to understand. I got it very clearly now. There is not going to be a second discussion of this nature.
Okay.
And we'll put it in place.
The reason why I'm here is that I'm responsible for the entity. I do believe that we can service the business as you want it to be structured. And if you're not happy with the way that we're servicing, I'm always available to have that discussion with you and to adjust as it needs to be done.
Okay.
I understand the inconvenience. I apologize for that. I can only tell you that in the future we'll try to deliver according to that, and hopefully it hasn't been too painful to educate us on that point.
Okay.
Perfect. I can use the email where I confirm to you.
Yes.
I had actually two there. Which one do you want me to use? Because I send it to you to two.
I don't know what the other... It's a backup in case my site goes down or something. But
let me see. I can tell you in a second. I have.
That's the main mail, yes.
And then.
Yeah, that's just a backup in case my site is down and people need to reach me.
So shall I send it to both?
No.
You will receive a bounce back probably.
Anything sent to the first one, the main one, is copied to the account.
Okay.
But I just keep the when I'm traveling, so that, for example, if I don't have to get into my site and so forth.
Okay. So we can forget the.
Yeah, for intensive purposes. Don't need it. I mean, basically, if the first one doesn't work, call me on the telephone. That's the best.
Okay.
The best way. And my regular telephone number here is automatically diverted to my mobile when I'm traveling.
So that's.
It's actually, well, that works, yeah.
Oh, I have a home one too, which is.
They both ring on the same phone.
Okay.
So it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
All right. Perfect.
Sure.
One last question, and then do you care to receive any research or any, strategy views
or anything like that?
No. Perfect. You can ask me, of course, anytime you want. Any calls on market?
Like the conference calls or something like that?
No, just me talking to you about what we're seeing in the markets.
Never.
Just about transactions
in
the case we have them. Okay. I think that's all I have.
Okay.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Wolf.
Okay.